So thank you for inviting me here. So I'm going to be talking about the 130 DeV lines as a signal of dark matter annihilation and what else we can learn from doing gamma ray analysis. And on the part, thanking my collaborators, these are my collaborators that for the parts that I'm going to show results that I've done with them. So a brief outline. So Christopher already talked a little bit, quite a bit about that. So I'm going to glance through spectral features from the dark matter and the 130 DeV case, just for the whatever is relevant for the remaining of the discussion. Given that you want to talk about the dark matter signal, you also need to understand the backgrounds and you need to model the backgrounds. So I'm going to be discussing about how you can model backgrounds and how you can understand and probe their uncertainties, then implement that for general dark matter and for the dark matter annihilation towards the galactic center, and what we can learn for the expected associated continuum to the 130 DeV line, and then increase the size of the search by probing the entire sky and test for robustness of the dark matter line for different background assumptions from physical models, and also discuss a little bit about dark disks and smaller substructures from cosmological simulations, and conclude. So when you look for dark matter annihilation signals in gamma rays, you basically do always this line of sight integration, choosing a specific region of interest. You have mass, some cross-section, and some physical model that would give you this, the spectral shape of the gamma rays from annihilation, and of course some distribution. So what you want to, you hope to observe is maybe hardening of the spectrum without a clear cutoff in some localized towards a certain region. And for instance, that was the case of the Fermi bubbles, even though the Fermi bubbles are not that much. Then you can have something of a hardening of a spectrum with a clear cutoff, or an almost clear cutoff that would indicate a mass scale, a mass size. And there are claims that for the 10 GeV dark matter towards the galactic center, initially in a few degrees, and then extended to a few kiloparsecs, and Tim will be talking about that. And then you can also be talking about lines. And then on the other side, on the side of the raw square of the distribution, you can choose regions of interest. So you have the galactic center, where though backgrounds also peak, so you need to model them properly. And also, so towards, you also want to look towards known substructures like two spheroids that may be cleaner due to lack of their own, much of their own backgrounds, background gamma rays in them, or towards galaxy clusters. And Christoph actually showed that spectrum, that plot as well, which is anyway from his paper. So here we're talking about this, an associating continuum would be such a spectrum. This is produced at tree level. Typically, you have quarks and Gates bosons that hadronize and decay, and then the decay and hadronizing give you this smooth spectrum, which is done, which is enhanced, but featureless. At the same time, you can have much more, once you include radiative corrections, you can, that with process of such particles, you can have regional internal bremsstrahlung from an internal leg or fine assay radiation from an external leg, which are suppressed at order alpha. So you are you have something that amplitude-wise is much less strong, but has a more clear feature closer to the mass scale, or lines at furthermore suppressed from, again, from loops. I'm only going to show the results that we care for, the remaining of the analysis. So what we care for is the energy, the fact that given that if it's a dark matter annihilation, then there is from the gamma ray analysis, there is evidence at different levels of strength towards a more concentrated dark matter profiles. And for given a specific source of dark matter profile, you have for the line to 2 gamma, you have a specific cross section that is at the level of few times 10 to the minus 27 in units of centimeters cubed per second for the thermally averaged one. So Also, you can have, there have also been claims for a second line of a smaller significance. The second line has been, first people were these authors where they suggest the second line at roughly, I will be calling it 111, people call it 114 there anyway. There is an uncertainty at a few GeV in their exact value. But this second line does increase slightly the significance. And on the more important side, if the 130, 129 GeV line is coming from a gamma-gamma annihilation, then the 111 is practically coming from a gamma Z. And you expect to see both a gamma gamma and a gamma Z and possibly gamma H. So there is every reason to be to also include that line into the picture on the dark matter, if you want to talk about dark matter. Now, other regions where the 130 GeV line has been suggested, it hasn't been suggested towards spheroidal galaxies, which would be the first place to look after the galactic center. But it has been suggested towards unassociated point sources after, based on the 2-year Fermi catalog. And these are the sources. It's depending on the type of gamma ray data that you use. They may be 16 or 9. 9 being the more cleaner sample. There has also been a suggestion for a signal towards galaxy clusters. Now, once you have a second measurement of two lines, well, the first measurement being the galactic center, the second being towards unassociated point sources, you can ask the question, which is what Meng Su and Doug Finkbeiner did, how much of gamma, how many events, and what's the events rate? 111 GeV line and 129 GeV line. So if you only use the galactic center, you have a higher rate towards the 130 GeV line. If you use the unassociated point sources, you have a little bit more of, or roughly the same amount in 111 and 129 GeV. And if you combine, you get this dust line, which practically would suggest that if it's a gamma-gamma, the 130 GeV, and the gamma-Z, the 111, the relative cross-sections are practically the same. Now, going to the backgrounds, this is the Fermi sky after a few years. And what you basically see is so there are many known sources of gamma rays, which we need to study and model. So what you basically see, first of all, is the galactic diffuse, which comes from three basic mechanisms. You have PP collisions, inelastic PP collisions of cosmic ray nuclei with interstellar medium gas. They produce mesons, predominantly pi zeros, which decay and give gamma rays. This, in that sense, you can probe then the ISM gas, which is what you basically see as the main part of the main feature. Then you also have Bremsstrahlung emission from Bremsstrahlung radiation of cosmic ray electrons, also with interaction with the gas. Basically, you have the same morphology. Then you have upscattering of low energy photons from cosmic ray electrons, which is a little bit more diffuse, a little bit more difficult to say exactly how it looks, but it's a bit more follows the disk, but in a more diffuse manner. Then you also, and you can model all these things, and we will be talking about how you model these things. On top of that, you have point sources. There are that many point sources after the first 2 years. And you have extended sources. There are catalogs that give both the point sources and extended sources spectra. There is the isotropic, which should be extragalactic. And then also there are misidentified cosmic rays, which are also isotropic due to diffusion. So for the diffuse gamma ray parts, the parts from the pi zeros, the Bremsstrahlung, and the inverse Compton scattering, you need to have a propagation of cosmic rays in the galaxy. So on top of that, in general, cosmic rays are interesting for dark matter as an other indirect probe, because in general, when you have dark matter, you can produce equal amounts of matter and antimatter, so you want to look at antimatter cosmic rays. But So you want, in general, to make always a connection between cosmic rays and gamma rays for dark matter. And once you have some model for how cosmic rays are being propagated in the galaxy, you can either do gamma rays or even you can do studies on the microwaves. So what's how we do specifically this connection? One can do specifically this connection between cosmic rays and gamma rays. And these are people, I've worked with these people on various levels of the analysis. Basically, first of all, since we talk about a lot of photons at this level, you can go to the ultra-clean data to minimize cosmic ray contamination. Then you can, you typically want to use a big part of the spectrum. So we use energies from between 1 and 200 GeV. And you can break the sky in many parts. So we break the sky in 60 different windows. And once we have a specific model, we can calculate agreement between our models and the gamma ray, and diffuse gamma ray spectrum in each and every of these 60 windows. And how we calculate the, so the cosmic ray propagation is done through a numerical code called DRAGON. Basically, the input is sources, diffusion properties, interstellar medium gas distributions of atomic and molecular and ionized hydrogen, assumptions on the radiation field, the underlying distribution of the photons, the low energy photons, and also you cross-check with cosmic ray data on top of the gamma ray data. You also have, in calculating in the end, doing this analysis of comparing the diffuse gamma ray spectrum, you have to include, and we do include, point sources and extended sources and the isotropic stuff. So this is an example. So this is the full sky. Darker colors indicate poorer fit. So the 60 windows you get, this is what you get the first time you run it. When you run DRAGON, having fitted already cosmic rays, and so there are certain regions where your models are doing poorly. The reason for that is there are certain things you cannot include directly through in these codes to start with. One is this dark gas, which has to do with that not all of our molecular hydrogen and atomic hydrogen can be probed through the lines, through the line searches that typically are used to study the distribution. The other more important are these large scale diffuse features like the Fermi bubbles, Loop 1, and Northern Arc, and this is where, and there are good references for how their spectrum is and what is their distribution in the sky. So once you include that, you get a better fit. And then there are actually additional gas uncertainties that you have to take into account. So in the end, you end up with something that has a relatively good agreement in most parts of the galaxy. On top of that, then you can start varying the specific assumptions that came into that, which has to do with the radiation field and the gas, which are the two most important things. And here, green are indicating a better fit compared to whatever I saw to my previous last slide, compared to basically that. Red indicate poorer fit. So you can have different interstellar medium gas. You get, it depends on the model of the gas assumptions. There's always some freedom in this in these gas distributions. So you can cross-check them. You can cross-check the stellar disk distribution, which has to do with, in the end, of the radiation field. You can check the significance of the bulge, and you can do with the composition of the stars and the interstellar medium. So this is a way of probing uncertainties in this, what we call, let's say, systematic uncertainties in the diffuse gamma ray backgrounds. And then you can also go to the dark matter. And for instance, this is a simple case where this is now the darker colors indicate strength of limits. Darker regions are regions where you can get stronger limits from dark matter annihilation for different dark matter type of particles. So 2.5 GeV dark matter annihilating dominantly to muons, or 100 GeV dark matter annihilating dominantly to Ws. And you can derive regions where you have strong and weaker limit but at the same time, based on the previous and the part, have an understanding of how robust your limits are. So then, going to the line, you can implement that knowledge into the line search towards the galactic center. For that, you need, again, to choose a specific window. So this is the inner 10 by 10 degree box, center of the galactic center. Your models calculate backgrounds, which are given as dotted lines from the various mechanisms, from pi zeros, ICS, and Bremsstrahlung. You have extragalactic, you have point sources, and then you have a specific dark matter. So you have a dark matter that has a cross-section to the gamma rays as suggested by Christoph and Doug and other people. And you also can have something that annihilates to W's at this case that will give you a continuum. So you can combine and then get a fit. This is the cross-section to the lines. So then you can also derive upper limits based on the assumptions that you made. So here, for instance, suppose instead that it doesn't annihilate directly to W's, dominant to W's, but to big quarks or to various leptons, and you can get the cross-section that is allowed. So these are three sigma limits. This is mass, and this is cross-section. One here indicates this is 1 times 10 to the minus 26. So this is the few times 10 to the minus 27 for the gamma ray line, for a single line or for a double line, and possible cases for whether it's if it's a single line, it's a 2 gamma or gamma 0 gamma heat. And you actually typically get, we get a factor of, not factor of 10 that typically people have said, but more like a factor of 100. The reason is once you study these backgrounds, then you can come and say that there are certain parts of the background that are more shaky, more difficult to establish their actual normalization, which have to do with gas distribution mainly. So you can get you will get a slightly weaker limit. Well, the limits that we get are typically a factor of 100. So your the cross section to 2 gamma, the cross section to 2 gammas is like a factor of 100 smaller than a factor of the direct annihilation to W's or B. So this is 20, this is 30, this is 1, the same axis. You can also play with how you treat the line free as, or you either take it from literature or you fit it yourself. That doesn't matter so much. You can also do further discussion about the radiation field in the inner part of the galaxy. So this is one part of the region, one part where we may have not that much of data, but the radiation field uncertainties predominantly influence the electrons, the annihilation to electrons into muons, not these channels that where you have a lot of prompt gamma ray production. There are other alternative ways you can do it. You can actually simply say that, let's say it's a power law, and let's fit it as a power law and see whether there is how much of a speed. So you have a power law and a feature, and let's see how much of any continuum thing you can add on top of that. Then you get typically stronger limits for the associated continuum, which is at the level of 10. But if you relax completely, then you get limits on the associated continuum on the ratio of the cross-section to total cross-section to cross-section to the line that is at the level of few hundred. We are typically sitting here. So you can say this is the most extreme way of the most tight limit you can get. This is the most weak. And that if you actually kind of have use specific physical models, the answer is typically lying around here. You can also, there are other alternative ways you can actually use. So this is the galaxy, a different, the inner plus minus 10 degrees in longitude, plus minus 5 degrees in latitude, part of the galaxy at different energies. And you can actually, this is the total gamma ray data. You can extract point sources, you can extract diffuse sources, and then say there seems to be an excess, which is what Tim has also been going to talk about. But the thing is, when it comes into associate for the lines and the continuum, you can say, well, in this part of the sky, in this specific panel, I don't see much of gamma rays. And I can derive, given whatever I see, I can derive a limit. This is typically more efficient when it comes into something that has like a window duct matter where you have a lot of promgamma rays. If you have something that has a lot of leptons, it's the less efficient of a mechanism to treat it. But it's an alternative way. And also gives relatively strong limits on the associated continuum. And then there is a very different way. Instead of doing gamma rays, you can say, so this is what Buchmüller and Garni did. This is the total cross-section on this axis. And ratio of cross-section to the line versus the total. So you can say this is what the line signal suggests. You're sitting in that, that shape. And then try to say, for specific models of dark matter, you can calculate what's also the case for the, what's the predicted antiproton flux. And well, while they are not sitting directly within the extrapolated region, they are already excluded from antiprotons. And in general, antiprotons can put some limits as well, which would suggest again that the cross section, the ratio of the cross section to the line to compare to the total is sitting between at the level of 10 to the minus 2, possibly 10 to the minus 1. But I mean, if you want to be conservative, you can still say that you are sitting in this part. And you can also try and exclude specific examples. So this was one of the papers that came after the line and suggested a specific cross-section to gamma z, but it had a total cross-section. And then you can go and say, oh, well, let's see how that model does with respect to the total data. And you see that gets excluded even at the level of, you don't even need to impose much of background here. You can see that the dust green line is already above the data. Now, because you use this continuum photons, you have a lot much more events than the simple few 130 dB line events. So you can, assuming you are talking about a dark matter signal, you can use that additional statistics to say, what does the continuum tell me about the distribution? So this is two different, so this is a plus minus 25 in every direction, smaller beams. The signal is sitting, the peak of the signal, that line is sitting in this box. The peak of the line sitting in this box. What you can say is, if you have a Casper profile, then the dark matter continuum is not constrained by any other part of the window other than where the line is sitting as well. If you have a more a less concentrated dark matter profile, then you are actually, what happens is you start for the continuum, you start getting tighter limits from other windows that are sitting further away from where the dying signal peaks. So if you want to have a consistent story, it means that you're actually losing part of the signal as well. If you are to keep the total cross-section to the continuum and to the line the same, which you should within the region, then you start having a problem explaining the entire line signal in that part, while at the same time not being further constrained by other parts of the window, other windows. And this is an alternative way of showing basically the same thing, where you can show that Burkitt profile is already excluded by the, even from continuum line photons. You can actually then go and extend your analysis and use the entire sky. So this is the entire 4 pi sky at 4.4 years. This is assuming all the line photons between, all the photons between 106 and 116 and 123 and 135 GeV. So the two lines, concentrated at the two lines, plus minus 5, plus minus 6 GeV. It's of the order of 1,400 photons. You can exclude some certain regions where to avoid, these are regions of, the black regions are the galaxy clusters where the signal has been suggested. And there are some smaller black regions where actually the point sources were, the unassociated point sources were suggested. In order, here you don't want to study the galactic clusters or the unassociated point sources. You want to study the general distribution of these photons and what can we learn about the robustness of the signal with respect to different backgrounds, the line signal with respect to different backgrounds, and also stuff that have to do with it. What's the general, what is the allowed distribution of dark matter in the full 4 pi sky. For that, so you have There've been suggestions for a dark disk as well. And once you see the unassociated point sources, you see that they are not equally, they are not isotropically distributed in the sky, even though there is a small number of them. So it's difficult to say whether how strong this is. But maybe what could be happening is you have some dark disk that is affecting the distribution of the smaller subhalos. So you want to also study dark disks on that aspect. And there are on other models that there's been some ZZFan and collaborators have been talking about dark disk recently. So you have some dark matter annihilation coming from the typically spherical distribution from a dark disk and from subhalos. And what you do is you want to maximize the likelihood for the data, and you have you need a theoretical model which is used on templates. So for the templates, you need the background. So this is a sample of templates. So this is a background gamma rays. This is calculated again from physical models, and we vary that as well. So this is a background gamma ray for the entire sky. This is if you assume only spherical halo for a given caspiness. This is where if you include also a dark disk, and this is varying from this to here. It's if you include much more of a small substructures. So you see it has a different impact. So you're basically playing with either this and that, or this and that. Or actually even something where you also can have a dark disk in that part. And you can derive then, you can fit the data, and you get a picture that seems to agree with also with and to confirm some of the things that have already been said. So first of all, you can check the cuspiness of the dark matter template. So the cuspiness of this, more cuspy means this is more concentrated here. So you see that there is a preference over cuspier dark matter profiles. This is a cross section here. The cross sections typically tend to be smaller by a factor of 5 to 10. That may be an interesting thing, an interesting thing to further think about, and I will talk a little bit in continuum. But also, it can be expected to some extent because you may maybe you're at some level you're also diluting your signal by extending your region of interest. So you get a preference for Cuspier profiles. What you also get is that varying given different physical models for the background that are. That are you have already cross-checked with other lower gamma ray data, you see that the line is always there. So this is the test statistic, which is just this ratio. You see that it doesn't get decreased much by changing the background assumptions. All these backgrounds are actually backgrounds that we could be living with. They are not unreasonably poor. They don't give unreasonably poor fits to the gamma ray data or to cosmic rays. You can also do, as we said, and so you can also say that even at full sky, you cannot explain decaying dark matter. Decaying dark matter cannot explain the line signal, given the morphology. You can also study the dark disk, and you can see that unless your dark disk is pretty thin, it's not preferred by the data. So only a very thin dark disk could be allowed, and that's to some extent is because the very thin dark disks, given the low statistics that we have, are yet not easy to discriminate from the background model itself. Then you can also go and say, well, we expect much more of a substructure, and then calculate the substructure given this is radius, this is the rho squared. So you can calculate the input of these smaller substructures that are within the galaxy, and calculate ask two questions. First, can they explain the number of unassociated point sources that we see? So we have, let's say, 9 events. From them, roughly half could be coming from background, but the remaining, how about the remaining photons? And you can get the point that only for the more optimistic cases do you get from simulations do you get the dark matter substructions can explain the line signal and unassociated point sources. But at the same time, if you extrapolate to smaller substructures, then you see that you get constraints from the high latitude gamma rays. So these substructures, the very dimmer ones, are not going to be seen as points, so I'm not going to give individual photons, but they're going to give a very diffuse flux. And so you can constrain that from that, and then that would be suggesting that either the cross section to the line is indeed smaller, as suggested, as we were also getting from the 4π sky by a factor of a few, from the value of few times 10 to the minus 27. So it's at the level of few times 10 to the, it's like 5 times 10 to the minus 28 for the thermal average value, or that you have dark matter cross section depends with velocity, but in a manner that is reversed from what we feel for the Sommerfeld enhancement, where smaller where scales with smaller velocity distribution are actually suppressed, or you can have simply suppression of the smaller scale substructure in the distribution, in the contribution. And so then after all that, you can actually fill in the picture of the 130 GeV line, saying that first of all, the associated continuum seems to be suppressed. Not, I wouldn't say that it's suppressed at the level of only 10 times more than the line, but still much more suppressed from what you typically expect. And that if you actually include different parts of the galaxy, you get a higher latitude. You get the limits that are suggestive of either something peculiar going in with the substructures, or that in general the line signal is high, is a little bit more smaller than we thought of with respect to its cross section. That's it. Thank you.
Questions? So probably I missed something. When you put the strings on the, you know, WW mode, BB mode, tau mode, and do you have like a model kind of in your mind that you can do that? I think in Kim et al.'s analysis, they either assume a ratio or assume, you know, like MSSM kind of model.
So yeah, typical models, you can, I mean, once you have this probe, so you can use this spectra from either from PIFIA or from PVPC and other codes. So typically dark matter models, you have combination of all these things, but you can add them linearly. The fluxes themselves can be linearly added. So the deriving a limit on a specific model is kind of easy after that, after you've done that point. So for instance, that was the case where we were doing this, we said you take this model. This model where the main annihilation cross section, you had an axino and a winnow, so the winnow itself was basically a dominantly annihilation to W, so you could exclude that model through that simpler type of models.
So you may have said this, and I possibly missed it, but can you say something about the overall goodness of fit if your background fits? I mean, you mentioned earlier on that, you know, all of these background models you were using in one of your later examples were reasonable fits that you could live with, but can you quantify that?
In the gamma ray stuff?
Yeah.
Well, you can quantify it for a given... So for a given set of assumptions, you end up with different chi-squares for different windows. So you can say that...
My question is overall, basically, for the whole sky.
Yeah. So for the whole sky, just fitting the entire sky as one spectrum, you mean?
Essentially, yeah.
Well, that's easier, because you can easily have regions of where your models fail, and the failure is canceling out in the full sky. So that's one thing we've noticed, that many of the models, so for instance, even here, you had the regions where you had better fit in the lower part, poorer fit in the higher part. And actually, if you were to include the full sky, the impact was canceling out. So you would say this model still survive. So you're actually, by breaking the sky in 60 windows, you are allowing for much more tests.
What I mean is, considering how good the overall fit is after you've broken it up across the whole sky, so taking the best fit in each of the windows and then actually asking how good a fit is this really of the background overall.
Yeah. Oh, well, this is what we saw here, right? The chi-squared per degree of freedom. So you have 0.58, 0.30.
But it, like, in total, when you sum all of these numbers up on this plot, I mean, what kind of chi-squared per degree of freedom do you actually get?
How do you weight the different parts? These parts are not equal area, in some sense. Maybe that's
okay, but you can treat them like separate bins, right? So you can still work out a total chi-square and total number of degrees of freedom, and then translate that to a p-value, assuming that the likelihood.
Well, typically it should be around one. Typically, it varies around the one per degree of freedom.
I didn't quite follow what you were saying at the end about the on associated point source. So let me see if I understood what you were saying. You're saying that these are associated with substructures, then you would expect a much larger signal from the smaller substructures, which give you diffuse emission,
right?
And which I agree with. And then if you don't see that, then you concluded that either there was Sommerfeld enhancement that was suppressing them, or something else.
Or, well, okay. So the thing is, either that you have Sommerfeld enhancement enhances the substructure, so you want something that is the reverse. So the fact that you see something at the major, the biggest substructures, which is the unassociated point source signal, then what you see is that at smaller substructures you don't see any diffuse part. So the smaller substructures would give a lot of gamma rays in this higher latitude. So you don't see much of a line over here, a line signal over here.
Yeah.
So that would suggest that either the annihilation cross-section goes down, then thermally average annihilation cross-section goes down with the velocity and suppresses the smaller substructures, which is the reverse of what Sommerfeld enhancement would do.
Yeah.
Or that once you test all these extrapolations, you always have a cutoff. What is the smallest scale that you're doing your cut, right? So if you go down to free streaming scale, you have a problem with these lines. If you're willing to stop at subhalos that are the level of 10 to the 3 or 10 to the 6 solar masses, then you don't have a problem.
No, I think you do. I mean, even if you just look at what's already resolved in simulations, you still expect higher flux from the diffuse, from the smaller substructures that are all at large distances, so they produce, as you say, diffuse light, right? So
the sky should be
glowing.
True, but at the same level, when we cut down...
With very minor extrapolation.
With very minor extrapolation, the difference between this sky and this sky was small. It was too small for the 130 dB line to be important.
We can talk about it later, because I did that case. But in any case, other question I had, what do you make of the spatial distribution of the unassociated point sources? Because you said any dark disk is unlikely to be significant.
The thickest dark disks are unlikely. The thinner dark disks are still allowed.
But why would the dark disk have substructures? I mean, they all get tightly stripped in the outer parts. Just like all the other substructures are. So why would the dark disk...
Well, okay, maybe I was referring to the potential of the dark disk driving the distribution, but you know better than me on these things. So the reason for the dark for thinking of a dark disk is also has to do with the fact that you may have a possibility where you have two particles of dark matter, and one is much more strongly interacting than the other, but it's a subdominant part of the population, and then that smaller part of the population has a disky distribution because it's more like gas. At this point, you can have a lot of indirect detection signals from this subdominant population of more strongly interacting dark matter. and you want to test that as well. And you see that, I mean, that has been implemented and suggested with respect to the 130 GB line as well. And the point is that there is no clear preference for a dark disk, so.
So the dark disk people recently proposed, actually they assume that 5% of dark matter is dissipational. It will lose energy, can just fall to the disk, just like baryons. So that's, it's kind of slightly different, the concept you talk about from the dark disk. It's a real disk.
So I have a question about substructure. When we heard in the simulations of Eris, when you include the baryons, that there's very little substructure of resolution that survives in the galactic center region. So my question is, when you try to have an annihilation model that fits the diffuse gamma ray flux in the inner galaxy, do you get, where are the strongest constraints, from the high latitude in the center region or from the anti-center region?
No.
Or even from the extragalactic background?
So the strongest constraints are actually not from the very part of, not from the very central part, but let's say from regions around here. So a little bit offset from the galactic center.
And what about the anti-center? I mean, you expect substructure there, of course, and that as you move away.
No, so you're right, but the thing is that towards the anti-center, exactly because of the model dependence of the substructure, it's more difficult to say something more robust. So you see, the point is exactly, if you think of substructure, the anti-center is a possible way to think of, but then there is a lot of model dependence. If you think towards the very center part of the galactic center, then you also have the model dependence of the exact caspiness of the dark matter profile. And a good compromise is you go a little bit offset from the galactic center, and then you have a much better understanding of the, much less variation of the dark matter profile. And on top of that, you have also avoided the big uncertainties that come into the disk, because part of the reasons why we get the weaker limits on the associated continuum from the galactic center compared to other authors is exactly because we were allowing for, we were extracting some parts of the backgrounds that we feel less confident about.
So do we have one final question? No? Okay, so let's break for coffee. Thank you, Elias, again.